All right. First and foremost, I want to start by saying, first and foremost, thank you for taking the time to this interview, Rudy. I really appreciate it. I know you're very busy, especially with you being in different time zones and everything like that. So thank you. It means a lot.
It's my pleasure. You know, I'm happy to always do what I can. So we're meant to be, you know, killing it in this video.
Hey, dropping a lot of gems. Real quick, just start out by giving a quick background on yourself, like where are you from? And so you're currently in South Korea. What brought you to South Korea?
Okay, so my family's from Bosnia, but we moved to Iowa when I was in middle school. So we're from Iowa, Waterloo, Iowa. But now I'm in South Korea, as you know. I've been here for about, so I've been here about for two and a half years so far. And I like it. I love it so far here. It's amazing. I came to Korea for teaching just for a year, but I ended up just staying here a lot longer after I realized I can do a lot more. So I was going to be here just for a short time, get married with my girlfriend, right now wife, and then go back. But, you know, plans change.
Real quick, one of the things I like to ask folks about is upbringing. So, like, what was your childhood like? I like to think there's like particular experiences people have, kind of like as kids that kind of shape them to be who they are. So, just out of curiosity, you mentioned growing up in Bosnia, and kind of can you go a little bit deeper into kind of like the upbringing and kind of reflect? Is there any particular experiences for you that kind of help shape you to be who you are? Whether it's like experiences, you know, like this is from parents or friends or anything like that.
Yeah. So, for me, we moved a lot. So, I was in the U.S. even when I was younger than that, but then we moved to Germany and we stayed there for about a year, and then we moved back to the U.S. too. So we moved around a lot. I mean, because of work and stuff, especially my father. So for me, I guess my experience was I was always hopping around and meeting different kinds of people. You know, I remember being in Germany, and there was like we stayed in this home where there was like this big building. It was just a lot of apartments in there. It was just mostly for refugees and immigrants, you know, like pretty much who are just trying to start their life in Germany. So I met some interesting people there, you know, and I liked it, you know. And then when I came back to Iowa too, I met some interesting people. But most people who had like a big impact on me from my experience is at the mosque, at middle school and high school, you know, as you know, especially Muhammad and Ahmed's father. You guys, you already know him. So he's one of the guys too. And so it was a lot of them, and not just him, but other people too, you know, especially the older men and women at the mosque. They were like my uncles and aunts, pretty much all of them, you know. So they were just like always, you know, giving me advice, trying to help and stuff. So that helped a lot, you know. And hopping around was the biggest thing, I think. I got experience from different people, you know. So I'm very fortunate, I guess, for that situation, but a little bit unfortunate too, because, you know, you're hopping around always. So that kind of, you know, throws you off sometimes, but still there's some good
things to teach you though. Where'd you kind of see, what career did you see yourself going into as a kid?
At the beginning in middle school, it was engineering, pretty much engineering, because I kind of like the time I looked up to, you know, Ahmed Muhammad's father a lot. You know, my father was in construction, but I didn't like construction so much. You know, like construction was okay, but you know, my family was all about labor work, you know, so everyone was always constantly doing labor work, you know, and I didn't mind it, you know, construction work and everything, but I just didn't see myself doing that day in, day out, you know. So they were doing and she was doing an engineering, and he was telling me about his job and how he went there, you know, and that's what got me really interested in engineering, you know, when he told me a lot about engineering, Ibrahim. So I got really focused into it, and I wanted to actually be a project management engineer, because that's what he was for a while. So that's why I really wanted to get into it, because it's like a different project every time, right? Then high school came around, so I kept doing that, wanting that, but then I slowly changed as, you know, I was getting older, because I was like, okay, there's many other fields that.
Did you enjoy school at all, or? Were you the opposite?
This might sound a little bit bad, I mean, for Waterloo, Iowa, but I did not enjoy school in Iowa. In Germany, amazing. Like, nothing against, you know, I don't want to seem like, you know, a douchebag, you know, about it. So, just the feeling of it, you know, it was just the feeling of it, you know, like when I went to Germany, I felt like I can do anything and everything and not, you know, you don't have to worry about being judged or anything, you know, like you can like study in any field, you can like look at it a different way, however you want, in different, you know, not markets, I want to say fields, you know, like if you liked, for example, art, you can be in art class, no one will care, you know, like in like middle school and high school in the US, I felt like it was more like people were just constantly looking at you, judging you. Well, in Waterloo, Iowa, you know, like I'm not sure if other schools are different, right? You know, other schools, all schools are different. Like some schools are, you know, they're a lot better than, you know, the certain ones we go to sometimes, you know, that just depends case by case, right? It's all different. So it was, I couldn't pick, obviously, you know, so that was the only school available for me at the time, but I didn't like it so much because I just felt like people were always just kind of negative, you know, always trying to, you know, bring people down. So I didn't have the same feeling as I did in Germany. In Germany, I felt like, you know, we can do whatever we want and just, we can be outgoing, you know, and we can get into any field we want without ever thinking about, you know, negativity being there. So that was a little bit, you know, a downer for me. So I felt like school was boring and, you know, not really fun too much.
Outside school. How'd you spend your time outside of school?
Outside of school, I mean, middle school, it was like 6th grade, 7th grade. I was sometimes, you know, I was trying to like earn money here and there, you know, shoveling, cutting grass, you know, doing all kinds of things just to get some money, working with my dad, you know, under sometimes we would work, you know, some small construction jobs here and there, you know, just to get some extra money and stuff, you know. At some point, you know, even when we got to high school, I was doing people's homework too sometimes. That was pretty bad. For money, you know, not too much, no, not too much. It was like, I remember in math, I was getting like $3 per homework, you know, so, because it was easy, you know, like, especially math, you know, like math is, in Waterloo, Iowa, math was pretty easy. I mean, math, what I learned in Germany in 5th grade, it was like 8th grade, like in Waterloo, you know, like it was, I don't know how to explain it, but people, they take it a lot slower. I'm not sure like what the program is or why, but they take it a lot slower in the US. Like, but then, you know, that had a consequence on me. You know, my father started, you know, saying like, where are you getting this money from? You know, like, I started having things. He thought I was selling drugs and stuff. I was like, no, I'm just doing people's homework and shuffling and cutting. I was like, all right, you're stopping the homework part, you know? So
fast forward, you get to college. What kind of, so you mentioned what pushed you to wanting to become an engineer and your experiences of having like someone that served as a role model and actually was able to show you and teach you about, okay, here's what engineering entails, here's what we kind of do for project management engineer. And you kind of early on, like, this is something you have to go to college for. But what was in particular that pushed you to Iowa State?
It was just, I mean, it's an engineering university. That's how I saw it. It's an engineering university. If I'm going to do engineering, it probably wouldn't be at UNI or University of Iowa. I thought about other universities too, but at that point, I think I was just looking at my best option financially, because if you go out of state, right, you have those out of state tuition costs, you know, and I didn't have too much information and knowledge about other universities in other countries, you know, like, for example, in Germany, you know, like it's now, you know, you can afford it a lot more as a foreigner to study there, you know. I think it's almost free or free in some fields, you know. So I didn't have that knowledge at that time, you know, so or information. So, and, you know, my parents, they don't either, you know, they're just immigrant labor workers, you know, who don't speak a lot of English, you know. I love them, of course, everything, but, you know, they didn't have too much information for me, you know, for that area. So I was writing a little bit solo on that part, but I decided on Iowa State because it's an engineering university, you know, and I was going into engineering. That was the biggest thing, you know, and I thought it could give me more of a bigger chance to, you know, afford it and graduate from there, you know. That was my best option scenario, you know, that was my best scenario pretty much.
So what was your experience like in college with engineering?
With engineering, in the beginning, the first 6 months hit me quite hard, you know, as everyone does, you know, the first semester, you know, it's just a surprise. It's a big, like, difference between high school and university, you know. I think they got to definitely fix that gap, you know, because I got too lazy for a while in high school. I got too lazy, you know, at some point, you know, because high school is just different, you know. Well, in Waterloo, it was, you know, and just it was just a lazy feeling constantly, you know, because everything wasn't too hard, you know. And when I got to college, the first 6 months was like, whoa, you know. But the good thing is, you know, I had I did some community college before that in Hawkeye right there. It's Hawkeye Community College in Waterloo. I did that while I was in high school, and then I did a little bit more after high school because I transferred to Iowa State technically, you know. So I was in Hawkeye for about a year, I think, yeah, a year. Because I spent 6 months in Brazil through the Hawkeye program, you know. So
was that your first time going to South America?
Yeah, that was my first time going to South America. That was my first time, like, just going alone and just, you know, just riding alone pretty much in another country, you know. So it was in the beginning, I was a little bit worried about it, you know, because I was like,
to do a study abroad, or what initiated that kind of idea?
It was mostly, I guess, like, I felt like I had a little bit, you know, some connection there, because there were some friends that I had were from Brazil, and they could show me around in Brazil. And I was thinking, okay, I also want to get out of Iowa, kind of get out of Waterloo, Iowa, especially, you know. I don't want to be here anymore. I just felt like it was just putting me down. There's so much negativity there, you know. People are just sometimes, you know, pushing you down sometimes, but not everyone. Obviously, there's some good people there too, but, you know, sometimes I felt like I had to get out of there. So I finally made that step and said, okay, I'm leaving. So I went to Brazil, and it was in the beginning.
Did you shock at all?
Yeah, definitely. The first month I was a little bit, you know, like, scared, and I wanted to go back. But then after that, I was like, this is nice. I like it, you know. But I was always, you know, still a little bit scared to do a lot of things, you know, go out a lot of the people, you know, and to do things. Because I just stayed at home mostly, and then traveled around by myself. You know, when I was in Brazil, kind of just rode it solo a little bit, because I was a little bit, you know, scared to kind of hang out with the groups a lot, because people were getting into some shenanigans sometimes there. So I couldn't take the risk, you know, because if something happens to me, you know, who do I fall back on? There's no, you know, mom and dad, you know. My dad passed away too. So, you know, and then my mom, you know, like, she was a dishwasher at the time, you know, like, there's no way I can fall back on anybody, you know. There's no plan B. I'm the last resort, you know. So I got to think, you know, 3, 4, 5 steps ahead, you know, before I do anything. So
yeah, it's not like it really definitely pushed you to, like, grow up much faster. Even some of the experiences with high school, what was it exactly that, like, you kind of first had that realization of just, like, okay, it's not necessarily you want to take care of me, but I'm the one that's going to have to take care of myself. When did you kind of first have that realization?
I mean, when my father passed away, that was the first thing. My father passed away. I mean, the next day, I just thought to myself, I mean, I need to step up now, you know, and this is the time. I can't be messing around, you know. But obviously, before that too, I still, you know, did my part, you know, at home and, you know, with some other work and stuff. So I still did my part, you know, around, of course. But then when he passed away, that's when I was like, okay, it's like there's no plan B. And, you know, I have a younger sister too. And, you know, I have older siblings too, but the younger sister for me was like more, okay, I want to be her plan B, you know. If anything happens, she can come to me, you know. So, and then, you know, I told my family too, like, you know, the only way I can actually succeed out here even more, so I can take care of our family and friends and community, is if I leave. I need to leave. I need to branch out, have more opportunities, you know. And it worked out in the end, you know. I told them I can't stay. I would like to stay and take care of everyone, but I think you guys would be fine too. And I want to take care of you guys in the long term, you know. And so right now the long term plan has been active, and, you know, slowly it's coming into place. But the part where I had to take care of myself was just after my father passed away. That was like, okay, I got to be the safety net. I can't be looking at someone else being my safety net. I have to be the safety net.
Yeah. And out of curiosity, would you say, like, today, even till today, like, that's kind of like your biggest driver and motivator to kind of work as hard as you work right now?
Yeah. I definitely, I mean, that's one of the biggest ones. Yeah. I mean, slowly I've been changing my mindset that, you know, I just have to, like, you know, also just be happy, you know, of course, you know, because you want to be happy whatever you're doing, because that's something that's very important, vital, I think, in the equation of success, you know. But I would say, yeah, I mean, I want to, you know, make sure that people are doing okay and are safe, you know, and I want to be there for people, of course. Of course, you know, people should also, you know, push themselves and try to do really good, because we should all try to be the best, you know, person we can be. But, you know, sometimes people need an extra push, you know, just a little bit help, you know, so you can't sometimes do everything by yourself, you know, you need that little push, you know. So I wish I had that sometimes, you know, when I was even younger, even more, you know, but everything happens for a reason.
And with adversity, it can come with a lot of stress sometimes. And when you're kind of having moments like that where you feel really stressed out, even in like stressful moments, how you go about like dealing with the stress, as well as how you recover?
Yeah, for me, the stress, I just think about, there was stress before, there's stress now, there will be stress, you know? So it's never ending. It's never ending, man. It's going to keep coming. It's never ending. It's going to just keep hitting you. It's going to just never stop. So the best way to think is, oh, it's just another phase. We're going to go through it, you know, like, it's going to be okay. Don't worry about it, you know, because in like 6 months or a year or 2 years, you're going to be like, oh, that was nothing, you know. This stress right here is even worse, you know, because it always like passes, and then you're like, okay, what about now, though, you know? It never ends, man. It just keeps coming, you know. But I guess it's how you deal with it, right? So don't think of it as stress too much. Just think of it as another, like, you know, fire you gotta put out. Because you just gotta, but you gotta be the guy, just, or you gotta be, you know, the person who puts out fires. That's all. You gotta just constantly put out fires. I mean, just you gotta be that person. You can't just like always think, oh man, another problem. Oh. Like that's not gonna be a good kind of mindset, you know, because you always gonna have problems, right? It's always coming from every direction, and you're not gonna even see it coming. It's gonna hit you. It's gonna do an uppercut on you.
When you were in college, what were some of the most stressful, or what were some of the biggest fires you had to deal with when you were in college?
Money, man, money. That was the biggest thing. Money. Like, it's not even, it wasn't even studying, it was money. Like, it really, it's money. It was just money. I just, like, I hated thinking about, like, you know, if I'm going to have enough money to pay for rent or electricity or anything like that, you know, like, if I'm going to have enough money for food, you know, for the next month while I'm, like, you know, studying, you know, of course, that's, like, the worst feeling, because it's not even connected to your studies, you know. So I'm just, like, I'm so confused, you know. I'm just, like, oh, my God. But I always got through. So I have, you know, my advice to people would be just like, hey, you're going to get through. Don't worry about it. Even if you're like, if you're struggling eating canned food and, you know, ramen and all that stuff, you know, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. You know, like, just go through that phase and you'll be okay, you know, because life will change after that. It will, you know, like, don't think it's going to be like this forever, you know, because some people think it's going to be like that forever, where they're going to eat that way, you know, or be struggling that way, paycheck to paycheck. You know, if you have that kind of mindset, then it's actually going to happen, you know? So you got to think like, I'm going to get more, you know, I'm going to grind and I'm going to get more. And that's how it is, you know?
Being broke isn't necessarily something that's temporary, whereas being poor can be, I think of being poor as not necessarily as the same thing as being broke. I think of it more of as like a mindset, and it's the result of being broke, because in those times it's hard to not have like negative thoughts, because like you always think of like, oh, what if I can't get the electricity, right? What if I can't get that? And that could sometimes eat people up. And I know for me, it's something I've dealt with it too. When you have those type of thoughts, it can be sometimes hard to fight. In those moments, what was it that kind of helped you to stay positive and just like keep thinking about, okay, I know I don't have this right now, but what can I do to kind of like control the controllables and get back to that way of thinking of, this is on me?
Yeah, I would say it was probably the people around me. I mean, I was lucky to have a good group of friends around me, you know, at the time in Iowa State, you know, so those people just like motivated me, pushed me forward. Whenever I was having a day I was down, I could talk to them, you know, they're having a good day, I'm having a bad day, you know, we can balance each other. You know, and then they're having a bad day, I'm having a good day, we balance each other, you know. have a good group of friends around you who always want to, you know, go forward and succeed. Like, that helps a lot. Obviously also reading, you know, watching videos, you know, that kind of stuff too, you know, where people are talking, entrepreneurs are talking, or, you know, inspirational people are talking, you know, that also helped. But mostly it was a group of people around you, because you become, you know, you become like just like your group of friends, right? You are, you know, you are the person who you hang out with, right? So that matters a lot. It does matter a lot who you're around. I mean, I cannot stress enough on that. I try to tell people always, like, it you become the person that you're around with. I tell it to my students right now. I'm like, if you're going to be bad, your classmates are going to also feel negative and bad, you know? Like, it's how it is, you know? So you have to, like, you have to be the change, right? You guys have to, like, change together as a squad, as a group, you know? This is how it is. Yeah, but
Fast forward to where you are now. So you graduated. You actually switched from engineering. You went and did business and finance, right?
Yep, accounting and finance, yeah.
Accounting and finance, my bad. What made you switch, and what led you on your path to end up going to South Korea?
So the biggest thing that made me switch was when I came to Korea. Actually, I switched after Korea. So I came to Korea the first time I came was for 2 weeks, but second time when I came, actually, yeah, I came for 3 months, and I did like this short internship with my friends.
The first and second time.
The first time I came because I had like some extra money from my scholarship from Brazil. And I, at the time, you know, my whole university time, I always thought I didn't want to spend any money on like materialistic things. So I always thought like I want to spend it on, you know, traveling, friends, you know, experience, you know, because I'm, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be, you know, broke pretty much later on. So I'm like, okay, use the money while I have, you know, while I have it, you know, on this. Of course, I should have saved some too, you know, but at the time, you know, I wanted to just spend it on experience, you know, so I wasn't too smart about that part, you know. I should have saved some, but I wanted to, you know, get the experience. So I was like, okay, I've never been to Asia. I've been to Europe, you know, South America, North America, you know, wanted to like just visit more places. So I thought, you know, okay, I want to go to Japan, and my friends weren't in Japan. So plan B was Korea, and my friends were in Korea. So I said, come down, you know, come over here. And I went over there, and I didn't know what I was like coming into, to be honest. The country was a lot more different than I thought.
Expectation.
Like, I thought I was going to like, just like not such a high tech country. Like, I thought I was just going to another, like, I guess like city, like maybe like Des Moines or like Iowa City, something like that. Maybe like, you know, like that kind of place. And then, you know, countryside would be like really big. You know, I thought the countryside would be really big and there'd be a lot of, you know, farms and stuff, but it was not. It was completely opposite. Like, I came here and it was so high tech. And I was like, yeah, this is way ahead of like Iowa or most of US. Like, they're way more high tech and efficient, you know.
So
it was surprised me, you know, like they really follow that double E standard, you know, efficiently effective, you know, like they're very like on that. So I was very surprised, you know. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I was like, I gotta come back, you know. I have to come back. 2 weeks is not enough, you know. So second time I came back because I was like thinking 2 weeks is not enough. I need to spend like a little bit longer time here. Because like I was like, I want to actually experience South Korea. I just be there for like 2 weeks, you know. So I saved money.
How are you able to afford that?
Oh, I saved money like crazy, man. When I have my mindset set on something, I save money like left and right. So BioLife, I mean, working at, you know, I was working at two jobs. So I was going back and forth. On the weekend, I go to Waterloo, work in a gas station too for a while. You know, like I was going back and forth a lot, you know, so I was doing all kinds of things just to get some money. And then I finally collected enough in January, December, after doing some, you know, some jobs here and there, and then also donating, you know, and paying for things. I was just being very cheap too, you know, buying like cheap food. And finally I bought a ticket, and then, you know, I had to save some money, and I had like very little money, you know, like saved up. It was such a terrible plan. I did not save enough, you know. I came here and like, and I was living like a poor person. It was just ridiculous. I made such a bad plan. It was horrible, man. Like for 3 months, I don't know. I ended up doing, you know, couch surfing. I ended up sleeping at like a at a person's house, yeah, for like 3 months for free. I just had to pay for like electricity. Yeah, so like it was, because you can do couch surfing, you can stay at people's houses like when you're traveling, you know. And I was just like,
costing you for the electricity.
It was cheap. It was like 80, 70 bucks a month, you know. So it wasn't bad.
Where did money go when you came here outside the flight?
It went just towards food, pretty much. It's like I would always just like just get food from that. Nothing else, like literally nothing else. I couldn't afford anything else, you know. So it was just rough, you know. At the time, it was rough, but you know, I made it through that phase, you know. And I did an internship there at the time for a short time. It was like a business internship. So he was like a business consultant, you know. So he would like go to the companies and talk to them about their products and stuff, and then also, because he had an engineering part of it too, and you get that engineering background where he's trying to actually fix their product at their company that they made a deal on. If there's an issue, you know, and then he would visit new company, new prospects, you know, to actually, you know, see if they would like this too. He was mostly in sensors at the time. I'm not sure if he's in a different one right now. It was a friend's father that I was
in a brand new country you've never been to before.
Yeah, it was a friend I met at Iowa State, his father's company, you know. So networking is really important. Network with everyone and anyone, you know, like it's very important networking, you know. And that helped, that changed my mind a lot, you know. Like when I was going with him, I really liked his job, you know, a lot. And I was thinking, okay, maybe I should be like a consultant, you know. I really like, you know, learning about new products and seeing how you can, you know, put that product into their company, you know, make them kind of like more efficient with your product. For me, that was nice. I like that, you know, efficiency part by it. And then, you know, I came back. In finance, why I got in finance was it was more about markets. I added finance a year later after that. It was only accounting, because accounting, I was thinking, okay, I want to get into business. I want to learn about business a lot more, the numbers, you know, how to run the numbers pretty much to be more efficient, you know, on if I do open a business later, I want to be more efficient. And then a year later came and I met Bashar, you know, and then, you know, and then I got into finance more. He got me more into it. And I realized, you know, think future costs, historic costs. Yeah. So I was thinking both sides, you know, you got to think historic costs of accounting, you know, kind of like have the business layout. And then you got to think also future costs, right? Finance, you know, investing in the future long term. So I wanted both those sides. And that helped me a lot with, you know, the business today, you know, and also in the future, hopefully, you know, we can have both sides of it.
So what could you explain your business to the folks that are watching and kind of go into how'd you get the idea for starting your business?
So I talked to a lot of people around here. You know, I walk around a lot, I talk to a lot of people, and you know, I saw some businesses like other academies, and it's how I looked at how I
think academies are for the folks that don't know also.
Yeah, what the academies are, they are just they're small institutions, maybe like they're really small, like not that big. You know, you have like maybe like a total of six or four teachers, you know, at that place. So you have like maybe six or four classrooms, you know, they're not that huge, right? And then when you go there, right, you have maybe like, I would say a 6 or 8 hour day in the afternoon, you know, and it's not too long, not too like stressful, I guess, but it's like a mini version of like an actual big academy, right? Like if you go to the US, an academy is huge, right? Here an academy is smaller, right? And there's a lot of privately owned ones, right? And so I was thinking, you know, how can I you know, like also do this, you know, because I was thinking this seems more affordable for, you know, like the average person pretty much, you know. And I looked into the costs, and of course, you know, it wasn't too much affordable, you know, because, you know, everyone will be doing it then, you know. So I looked into it more, the costs and stuff, you know, and I was thinking, okay, maybe I can do this if I first start off, you know, even a phase before that to collect the capital. So I started doing, you know, private tutoring and stuff, you know, and private tutoring was more like, you know, you visit people's, you know, houses or they visit you, you know. So that's how I first started, you know, to like gain that capital. And then we ended up opening a gungubang. Gungubang is like a study room, you know. Study room is more like that's a phase before the academy, and now we're slowly getting to that phase right now. We're going to start hiring teachers hopefully by fall or winter, because you need capital for that. You need a lot more capital than I thought. but it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier getting into than in the US, I think, you know, because paperwork wise, you know, and costs are not too huge, but still expensive, but not as big as, you know, in the US, if you want to open an academy or something, because renovation, deposit, rent, all that stuff, you know, all those bills are not that crazy there.
How big of an industry is private tutoring in South Korea, and what are the numbers like for someone that, like, imagine someone just arrived and they started doing private tutoring, and what are the numbers like if you were able to progress to that point and do what you're doing now, where it's kind of, what was the word again, it was like have that classroom you had a, it was a specific term, I'm not sure I pronounced it.
What's that? It's the last part.
Yeah, I was saying, let's say someone just arrived, what are the numbers actually for doing just like private tutoring versus eventually being able to progress and just having your own classroom? I was asking though, what is that term called again, where you have your own classroom?
Study room. Yeah, study room. You have your own classroom. You mean like that? Yeah, so yeah.
Gongbubang, or what did you say it was?
Gongbubang, yeah. Gongbubang. It's like a study room, because gongbu, study, and bang, room. So Gongbubang, it's a study room now. So that's what they call it, because it's a phase before that. But just to get that, you know, you also need to get like a big place for that, right? I mean, just for that right there, you need to drop a lot too, you know. But that's a more safer bet, you know, because the government goes easy on you too, taxes and stuff too. So it's a little bit easier for us for now, you know, but when you want to expand and hire people, you know, like then, you know, government puts a little bit more taxes on you, but that's still okay because you're in education, so they're a little bit easier on you, you know. But you need money for that right away, you know, like you need a lot more money for that. Initial investment will be the hit you're taking pretty much, but in the long term wise, you know, you're okay. Yeah,
someone typically doing that in South Korea, what would you say the average investment for something like that is
for an academy, a small academy investment? I would say you need at least need over six figures, that's for sure. I mean, you need over six figures. I would say about, I mean, it depends on the area you're going to, but to make sure that you have enough for a year, you know, 12 months, because you don't want to take the risk, you know, to make sure you have enough, you know, for the expenses and stuff for a year, I would say over six figures. I mean, around there, maybe 120, 130, you know, like probably around there, just to be good for a year, you know, in case everything turns bad, you know, everything is just like going south on you, you know, so.
How much does the typical like parent pay from private tutoring, and why is this so much more than most countries? Because in America, they typically don't pay that much for private tutoring.
Oh yeah, I know, yeah. Here is very competitive. When you visit here, you'll see like, it's a very like, the industry for like education is so competitive. I mean, like people are just constantly competing with each other. Like people always want to be better than the next person, you know, in like in their studies, you know. So they invest a lot. They study from morning to night, pretty much. Like it's just a crazy amount of like, you know, competition. It's ridiculous. I mean, so they're always investing money into it, seeing how they can do better. And you know, and the biggest fields are like math, science, and English. You know, those three. Right, those are the biggest ones that they, you know, compete in here. And because they have their big tests, you know, at the end of high school, and that gives them their entrance exam to universities. It shows them their options. And that's usually, you know, covering all the fields, you know, including English too. So that's why they really want to do really well in there. So they spend a lot, you know, they spend a lot more than, you know, most countries do, I think. You know, that's also included with Japan and China, but in Korea too, you know, Korea just is heavy on that. You know, they want to always be better than the next
person. How much is it per kid?
I mean, parents spend around, depends on their level. Usually if they're elementary or middle school kids, you know, middle school, I'm guessing they spend a little, what I saw in the numbers were like a little bit less, $300 to $450 per subject, $300 to $450 a month per subject. So maybe, so they're usually in three subjects, usually science, math, and English usually. Usually math and English is the biggest ones. Science is like maybe once or twice a week they go to extra, you know, an extra course. But math and English is the more popular ones. And then if you go to, you know, elementary, I think it was more. I think that's, if I remember correctly, or was it middle school?
Compared to the US, like how much cheaper, like for that, for those same numbers right there, in that same scenario, how much would you be paying in the US?
In the US, I think it's definitely cheaper. I mean, people don't, they don't, it depends where you are. If you're in a big city, then you'll see more academies, right? In, you know, like similar to here, some of the academies in the US, like in Chicago, if you walk in Chicago, you'll see some academies here and there, but they're not that, they're not too expensive, but I'm guessing they're a little, they're a little bit more because they're not common, I think, in the US, that's why. So, you know, you kind of own the market then, right? I mean, if you're in that area, because most people, they don't just get into that area in the US. It's not common, right? So when you have this many academies, you know, especially in Korea, the prices drop a little bit. This is this is still expensive. You know, people say it's expensive, but I think it's more pricey in the US sometimes. You know, I've heard of it going up there in the, you know, late hundreds, you know, so 600, 700, even more, maybe to 1,000. But, you know, you have a lot, you know, you have a lot more hours in the class too. So it's hard for me to compare. I don't have too much experience in the US, like for academies for now, you know, but maybe later I'll get more to that.
In the process of starting your business in South Korea, what were like some of the biggest challenges you had to overcome? Like, for one, like the language, although you did know a little bit beforehand,
yeah,
you able to kind of overcome some of those communication barriers, as well as maybe even for laws that you just moved to this country and it's a new set of rules. How did you adjust to that?
I just kept trying to learn more about the rules, the laws, you know, what to follow, what, you know, what to be careful of too, because, you know, you have to be careful in some situations too. But for adjusting to parents, you know, because most thing was parents, you know, they want feedback, you got to talk to them, you know, and I was very lucky to have, you know, my wife right now to like help me a lot too, because, you know, she was a big help, you know, like she translated a lot between us, you know. I speak a little bit Korean, but it's not like fluent enough where I can give them feedback about kids and stuff, you know. And parents, they like, you know, how much we're into it, you know, how much we care a lot and how much we want to progress forward with their kids, you know, because that was the biggest thing for us. We always want to, you know, like get more into like the students, you know, like life to help them more, you know, why they're not picking up on this subject maybe, or why they're not learning this area, you know, a lot better or easier. So then we try to learn more from the parents. We talk to them, you know, like what's going on, you know, like here, what's going on at home, you know, try to connect the dots a little bit. And the parents like that a lot, you know, like that we're always trying to go above and beyond. But how do we, the best way I overcame it was through my wife, you know, she helped so much with that. A language is, you know, is the biggest barrier, you know, if you don't have any kind of way to communicate with a lot of the parents, because some parents, they speak, you know, English, of course, but it's not too common, you know. So, and for me, I'm trying to pick up more, you know, fluent Korean, and because I should, you know, I'm in Korea and, you know, I'm running my business here, so I should definitely speak a lot more Korean, you know. I think that's my duty for the next year or 2 years, you know, so I'm trying to pick up a lot more, but still a struggle, but, you know, I'm doing a lot better. I'm talking to them sometimes here and there randomly, but I still can't hold too long of a conversation, you know, because
that's a big concern when it comes to languages, but yeah, it seems like you're getting there. Another thing I was curious to ask you about is how has the virus kind of impacted your business, and how are you, if so, how are you able to necessarily adjust, or what adjustments have you made?
Yeah, so to the virus definitely did take a hit on us. I mean, we had stopped almost all the classes when that started. We did stop all of them actually when the virus started, and then slowly it started picking up again. Parents were seeing that it's safe. I mean, especially in Korea, you see the numbers are now rising, right? I mean, if you look at the numbers for Korea, it's like yesterday was like only single digits. Yesterday it was like 6 or 8 new cases and like 1 or 2 deaths, I can't remember, but it was very little, you know, like it's pretty much not a big problem anymore. So it slowly picked up, you know. In the beginning we were completely, you know, like you know, it shut down, and of course we lost, you know, money and stuff, you know, but that's okay, you know. For us, it's not a big concern, you know, because it's something that's, you know, something you can't do nothing about, right? It happens, you know. You can't do, what can you do about it, you know, except just what, just be stressed about it and stuff. Of course we can go online, but, you know, we didn't want to go online because that's not, like, it's not the same for us. We approach students differently in person, you know, like we want to make sure they're learning it, you know. And sometimes kids, you know, they, you know how kids are, especially, you know, middle school, elementary, they can, if there's a video, you know, going on, even university, you know, they don't pay attention a lot, right? I mean, you kind of just like you can be playing a game inside while the camera's on, you know, and they got the videos on, you know. So that's why I didn't want to, you know, do the parents kind of bogus on that, because I think it's, you know, it's just going to be, you know, it's not going to work out. I can already see it now working out. So I told them just, you know, we're going to wait. You can bring them in, you bring them in later or whenever you want. So a lot of our students are coming back now because the numbers just went down like crazy, you know. So so they're coming back now slowly. If we think we have about half right now, so it's still half of them are a little bit scared, but you know, they're coming in slowly. I think by next month, you know, we'll be all good. I think it'll be 100% you know, fully functioning by then.
In your opinion, what do you think that it is that helped Korea kind of adjust so quickly to the virus? Today they're still not vaccine out. Is it necessarily just the implementation of social distancing was just so good that it curved things that well, or was there some other issues there?
I think definitely people were not going outside, you know, like that social distancing was the biggest one. I don't think masks had a big thing to it, because some people said it's the masks. I think it had nothing to do with it, because there are some countries that have no masks at all, you know, like they don't wear masks at all and still, you know, they're fine. But here, I think the part was people just were not going outside, right? I mean, that's the biggest thing. I guess the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks, like right away, nobody was going outside, you know, and people were getting tested like crazy. So testing was the biggest thing. People wanted to get tested, and testing was available right away. And it was like, I think it was free or really cheap, something like that. But like, I remember it was like nothing pretty much, you know. So I think that was really nice, you know. People were ready for that. You know, they were very good at, you know, it's like not stepping out, you know. But even when I went outside at night for a nice walk, sometimes I would see people, you know, in restaurants or bars, you know, like while I'm walking by. I'm like, I'm going on my night walk, you know, listening to like Gary Vee in my ear, you know, like while I'm walking around, you know. So, yeah, I'm like listening to Gary Vee. I'm like going around and I look over here and there's like some people just partying, you know, a little bit. So I'm like, but not, it wasn't many. It was very few people. But still, there's some people out, you know, out and about. But it was not.
I'm sorry to get off track, but I was just kind of curious about that one for those that are listening. You mentioned earlier, it helped you to like listen to, you know, budding entrepreneurs or people that are currently doing entrepreneurship. You mentioned listening to Gary Vee. Outside Gary Vee, is there anyone particular you listen to or would recommend listening to?
I right now only listen to Gary Vee, but before that, I was listening to Jim Rohn. But it was mostly Gary Vee. Before that was Jim Rohn. Jim Rohn was pretty good too. I liked him. But mostly Gary Vee right now, because especially, you know, Tea with Gary. I think is that called Gary? I can't remember. Tea with Gary. Yeah, he has this like live talk show
where he just has come in.
Yep. So that's really nice. That was really nice. I liked listening to that because you actually hear like, you know, real life problems and how people are dealing with it. You know. I like that, you know, and that kind of like, you know, pushed me to also think like I can, you know, like I can relate sometimes, you know, I understand, you know, sometimes. So it's nice. I definitely liked it. He's definitely killing it with that.
With things kind of going as the way they're going right now, it seems to be like as things are slowly recovering in South Korea, you're getting back to doing your business. Eventually within due time, you'll be back to operating as normal. Out of curiosity, what goals are you kind of working towards with your business, and where are you at now in that journey?
With this virus, it definitely slowed it down. I mean, our plan was hopefully by summer or fall to open it, you know, like to expand even more to a bigger place and hire teachers. But now that's pushing back to like maybe fall or winter. So hopefully by fall or winter, it's going to happen. But, you know, it wasn't too big of a, you know, postponed, so it wasn't, you know, we didn't have to postpone too long, so that's nice, you know. But long term wise, I mean, 5 years, I plan having maybe hopefully 3 academies by then, this year hopefully 1, and then maybe depending how it goes. I looked at other academies and their numbers, how they ran it, how many students they have, their expenses. And usually the first 6 months you're taking a hit, you know, but then after that they're doing a lot better. So hopefully after we open it this fall or winter, then I ride it for about a year or 2 years and then open a second one, you know. And then, because then you have when you have two, I talked to one of the people, and when you have two, that's when, like, you know, you have to learn how to, you know, manage both at the same time, you know, bouncing back and forth. And hopefully by then, you know, I'll have a more stable partner, you know, because I'll have, you know, of course I have my wife, but, you know, I need to bring in another person, I think, to like work with. That's the biggest thing. You know, I want to make a small tight crew, you know, so or we can just run everything, you know, because I know I can't do it by myself, you know, and you shouldn't think that you can do everything by yourself, you know, because then you're just, you know, then you're just wasting time on some things that you shouldn't be doing, you know. Like, I think you should be definitely giving responsibility to other people too, and, you know, running with other people, kind of, you know, sharing it. So I think sharing it was a lot better, because then you can run it better, right? But it's fine.
Revenue-wise, what type of numbers would you be expecting to do with three academies?
With three academies, revenue, I mean...
Also, let's say you did start hiring, and someone that was potentially interested in moving to South Korea was looking to come right now. What would you be looking for in a teacher?
I mean, for someone coming to South Korea to teach, what I noticed, like, with good teachers and bad teachers here, is the bad teachers, they're usually just here for fun, you know, right? So they're here for fun and they just want to, you know, just do the job and go home. That's it, you know. But for the good teachers I see, is like, they actually, you know, like, they're really, you know, passive and outgoing in their classes. You know, they're trying to put in work really hard. Like, they're always like trying to, like, you know, make the kids have fun, learn in a fun way, you know. Then, you know, kind of like try to do some extra activities, events, you know. So I like those kind of teachers, you know. I don't meet many of them here, because most of them here, like, they're more or less like, I just want to do my job 9 to 5, go home, you know, like, that's it. So but revenue wise, I looked at some of the academies, and depends on what's your program like, how many students you have. But if you're looking at, you know, like the average amount, you know, what I'm seeing from these smaller private ones, the bigger ones, they just have more students, which I plan on having less students. I don't want to have more students in one class. I just feel like it's not effective, it's ineffective. And, I think we're kind of just cheating out the parents. And, you know, if you have too many students, because you're going to lose some students, you know, they're going to be like stragglers in the class, and they'll be in the back, you know, not even focusing, you know. And I don't want to do the parents kind of dirty on that, you know. So I feel a little bit weird about that. So that's why I want to have smaller classrooms. They can pay attention more, you know, we can put in work, you know. And it's easy for the teacher, easy for the kids, you know, the parents too, to feel better. So if you have smaller group amount of students, and you have like not full classes and not empty classes, like average amount, I mean, you can bring in, I mean, revenue pair, how I think about it is pair teacher. So it depends how many teachers you have. Per teacher, you can bring in, like, you know, maybe 20 grand. I would say per teacher, about 20 grand, I think. If you have about average amount of students, 20 grand per teacher a month. So, yeah. Now, so
another question I have is, just as someone that's kind of been through the education system in the U.S. as well as Germany, you're now in a position where you're the person that's actually directly involved in it, and not just on the receiving end, but on the end where you're actually doing the instructing. How has that kind of changed your view on education, if it has in any way? And also, what do you think makes an effective education versus an ineffective education? How do they compare?
So far, what I'm realizing while I'm here, and through my experience over there and many places, even in Germany, my classes were smaller. You know, I think it's the size. I think it's size. Of course, teacher matters, you know, the teacher matters. And, you know, like, what kind of teacher, like, what teacher is teaching, you know, what are they, you know, as a, what kind of teacher are they? And what is the material they're using? Of course, that matters too. But I think the biggest one is size, you know, because you lose a few students, you know, if you have too many. You know, if you have too many, then you can't have everyone focus. I mean, you can't. But, you know, that's the problem with public schools. You know, not enough teachers, but you have like 20 some, you know, or 30 students in a class, you know, and because they're kids, you have to understand they're kids, and you know, they're learning how to focus, how to pay attention. That's one of the things they're learning while they're in class. They're not like robots where you can say, hey, pay attention, you know, and they like listen right away. No, they're gonna look at you for a little bit and then lose focus again, you know. So that is how kids are, you know, because kids are learning how to learn, right? They're learning that part too, how to learn, you know. So you have to be there for them to show them, you know, like, okay, you know, like give them focus a little bit, you know, and then give them, you know, give them some pointers, you know, kind of like get them to get to that, you know, level that you want them to be at. But that's hard to do with a giant group, you know, like, so you need that smaller group, you know, like where you can actually, you know, kind of get, you know, kind of personalize your classes to each of the students, you know. Because if you have like 5 students, then you can kind of like change that class compared to another class, even if it's the same level, you know. Because I have like some classes that are same level, you know, they're on the same level of textbooks and homework and projects that we do, but I approach the class differently because their personalities are different, right? I mean, that group and this group, you know, because we also pick which group for them to be in, you know, because it matters, you know, it matters for. I lost you. Yeah, it matters, like, you know, with who they are. Yeah.
A really interesting point. So I'm doing this thing called Future Founders. It's a startup bootcamp, and one of the speakers we had is someone that's looking at solving a problem in education and industry. And the point he made about teachers was they're necessarily almost public speakers that don't know their audience. What would you have to say about that? What's the importance for her? How important is it for a teacher to really connect with their students and like know their audience? Because again, you are really on a day-to-day basis a public speaker.
Yeah. Sorry, I lost you for a little bit in the beginning. Can you repeat that beginning part?
Yeah. Sorry. I'm doing a startup bootcamp. It's called Future Founders Startup Bootcamp. And yep. We had a session last week where we had a speaker come in. There's someone that's has their own startup and they're looking to tackle a problem in the education industry. And okay. One of the things they said during that discussion we had, they said teachers are public speakers that don't necessarily know their audience. And I was curious to hear your take on that statement. And what do you think is the importance of just kind of connecting with your students?
That's right on the dot. That's true. I agree. I mean, and that's what it is. Like when you walk into a class, especially public school, and you walk in there, you have like 20 some other students, and usually the teacher, I mean, they have no idea, you know, who you are or how you learn, you know, and what your personality is, you know, like what kind of person are you, you know, like what kind of style should you be learning in, you know? So I think it's 100% true, that statement. I mean, and that's why for me, what I'm realizing is just smaller classes. Because I had bigger, you know, classes with more students when I worked at another academy at a big company. You know, it was an academy, and they have like maybe 12 students. And for me, I thought that was too much. I mean, like because I was losing students in there too. You know, like they weren't all focusing, and I can't get everyone to focus. You know, while I'm also trying to give them the, you know, topic, the subject, because they also want you to finish this area, the subject, the same day, you know, like while you're trying to get these kids to focus. That's like, so it's like, it's impossible. You know, they're more focused on just like getting it done so they can show the parents, oh, we got it done. Look here, look, the book is done. See the test, they did the test. So they were more focused on just like, you know, what's on paper, you know, so, and not about actually did they learn, you know, so, and that was, for me, that was a little bit, you know, painful to watch, you know, that was, because I felt like, you know, I was cheating out the parents, you know, I felt like it was not right, you know, so I felt like it was a little bit wrong of me to even like tell the parents, yeah, they're doing okay, they're doing good, you can see test scores, but like I asked them same topic, same subject, like 2 weeks later, they won't know, because we just like, we blew through it, you know, and so it was just, you know, it goes through 1 year, it goes through the other, you know, so and then some students, they didn't pay attention at all, you know, and they didn't like, they just got bad grades in general because they didn't pay attention. I couldn't tell them every time, you know, because I have to like finish this material too. So I think he's definitely right. Probably, you know, teachers are just, you know, public speakers who don't know their audience that much, you know, because that's why I agree. I mean, like we gotta have smaller classrooms. The less students you have, the better, you know. Right now, if you have like 4 or 5, I think it's really nice. You know, you can get students to pay attention, you know. I'm getting them to focus, you know, and I like that a lot. And I can like actually see what their problem is, why they're not understanding a certain subject, and then we go over it together. And then, you know, sometimes I do sometimes reverse, you know, like, what is it called? The reverse teaching, where they're teaching the classroom, you know, they talk about the subject, they explain the subject, the kids do, you know, so it's really nice, you know. So you have, you there's many approaches you can have, right? But when you have a small classroom, you have a lot more availability, you know, to teach them, right, in different ways.
What do you, so outside of getting a student to pay attention, mm-hmm. when it comes to teaching students, and particularly teaching them about the process of learning and getting them to kind of almost not even like it, but just get better at understanding the process of learning and just initiating that process, what do you typically see as the most effective strategy?
Sitting down with them and talking to them one-to-one, you know, if there's a problem and they're not, you know, maybe they're not doing homework, or maybe they're not doing as good on this subject, so they're doing poorly on their tests, you know, because they have tests by units. I give them tests by units too, you know, everything is, you know, organized in there, so the numbers can, you know, show too. So if they're not doing well, then I meet with them one-to-one, and then, you know, I talk to them, so what's happening, you know, what do you not understand about this, you know, and then I go over it with them, I talk to them, and then if I see that they're losing focus or they're not paying attention, then I'm like, you have to listen, you know, I try to motivate them, you have to listen, if you don't listen, then, you know, how can you try to understand this area, and, you know, you got to find a balance point. I always try, like, you know, tell the students balance, you know, like, I, even when I do this, the students right away know what I'm going to say. Because I'm like, balance, you know, like studying and having fun, you know, like, because they always wanted to have fun, you know, like watch videos, play outside, you know, do different things. So I was telling them, like, you got to have a balance point, right? Like, your job is to learn, you know, like, so you need to focus for like 5 minutes, learn really, like, you know, like really actually focus on it and try to put it in your head, say it many times, like, what is this? Again, say it all, you know, I try to say it in a very happy way, in a very positive way. And they actually say, and they put it in their head, and it enters their short-term memory, and then slowly, I want to mention it again later, and then enters their long-term memory, you know, because that's the mission, right? After maybe 45 minutes, an hour, you say it again, and it slowly enters their long-term memory. And I kind of ask them why, like, you know, like, why are you not focusing on it? Because I want them to understand, you know, the idea of it. So they don't have an answer. Like, most of the time, they don't have an answer, obviously, you know, because they're not focusing, because, you know, it's boring, right? When you're learning about it, sometimes it's a subject, so you got to make it fun. Sometimes you have those boring things too, you know, like, where it's like impossible to, like, sometimes to make it fun, you know, like math. Like, math can be fun, yeah, but it can also be super boring, right? I mean, like, so you can't make everything ridiculously fun, you know? So you have those boring moments too, you know, and the students, you know, I try to get them to pay attention to that part, and let them find the value of learning, you know, in a short time. Because in Korea, they study for a long time. I tell them, you know, instead of studying for 10 hours, study in a very, you know, efficient and quality way in 30 minutes, 40 minutes, you know, focus hard. Then you can play for like 2 hours, an hour, 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever, however long you want to play.
As an educator, what's your take on GPA? Like, do you think in the U.S. today, it's a big determining factor when, like, a student is transitioning from high school and college stage, but
yeah,
in regards to how successful a student will be in college, do you think it's really that meaningful?
No, I think it's definitely not that meaningful. I mean, okay, it's just one sort of testing that, you know, someone made, and I think that student maybe is just a different, he or she just has a different style of thinking, you know, has a different approach to things, but I think the GPA doesn't really make up students, you know, success in the future, because they can do a lot more in different ways, you know, in the future. That GPA is just one form of testing, you know, that, you know, we have to obviously make some kind of form of testing where everyone can be tested, you know. So I understand why it's there, you know, until a better system comes, you know, which slowly we're getting there, we're making a better system, you know, as you can see in our educational system, you know, that we're slowly moving up the ladder, you know. It's not as it was, you know, 100 years ago, you know, so it just takes time.
Interesting point. When you look at, like, education, compare it, and almost if you view it as an industry, kind of like, as we're talking about private tutoring in South Korea right now, when you compare it to other industries, like the automotive industry, or like biomedical industry, or any other industry, yeah. when we talk about progression over time, like, things are always innovating, I'm better. that's just what you can expect with most industries, because we always want to do things better. But when you look at education, like, yes, we have had more technology integration. Instead of using a chalkboard, we started going from projectors, to the smoothing board. But
yeah,
in regards to the how we teach, like being able to adapt to people's different styles of learning, as you mentioned, like the ACT, like the type of testing they do isn't necessarily actually, it's not a good measure because it doesn't adapt to every single style.
Yep.
You see education starting to take a bigger shift towards adapting to everyone's different way of learning, because no one's denying the fact that people do learn differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you see happening within the next couple of years, or do you think that's very far out?
It's hard to tell with the technology that we have now, and you know the innovative ideas that we're getting. You know, it's really hard to tell. It's really hard to tell. It's just like, I mean, anybody can tell you, oh, this will happen in 10 or 15 years. But honestly, it's so random right now, because like we've been hit. We're at an age where we've been hit with so much information, you know, that you can't tell what's going to happen in 20, 30 years, 40 years. Like people in 1960s, 50s were guessing we're going to have like, you know, flying cars now, you know, you know, so it's not going to. Yeah, I think people are just off, you know, they're guessing for, you know, obviously they're guessing because, you know, they see movies or read certain books that, you know, makes them to decide on that, you know, future because of a certain data, historic data. But if you compare that data to even, you know, the data before that, you know, then it doesn't match up to like that. It was just never, I think it was never really on the dot, you know, obviously. But we sometimes guess around sometimes, I guess, yeah. And so I think for, you know, education, I think we will definitely improve, you know, in the next, I think, you know, next generation, because I think, you know, this generation right now that we're in, I think, you know, we have a lot more minds on it, and we're more connected. I think we're a lot more connected, you know, we're a lot more open to things. We have a lot more information available. I mean, like, just information is the biggest thing, you know, so much information out there. So I think, you know, we'll definitely change it, but I don't know exactly when, you know, to be honest. I just know that it's going to change. If it's going to be the next 40, 50 years, 60 years, maybe. You know, it's hard to guess, you know, because it's random at this point. You know, it's especially this time, like our age, it's just hard to tell. It's very hard to tell because, you know, technology is making everything more random, you know. So
one thing I have noticed is, like, for example, when it comes to particular fields, like, for example, software engineering.
Yeah.
You can still go to you can graduate high school, and right after high school, you can go to college to get a degree in software engineering, and that might take you, they say it's 4 years, but the reality is, like, taking that many credits is typically hard. Most students typically do it in 5 when it comes to software engineering.
Yeah.
However, there is trade schools that are coming up for software engineering, and you're eligible for the exact same jobs, and it's typically literally 1 year. And you're spending all your time straight on software engineering, and they don't necessarily dive into, you know, the liberal arts, like having those gen eds. And it's something that's unique because although it's not huge yet, you definitely, it's noticeable that there is a rise in that kind of stuff. Same with
science,
same thing goes there. Now, if a student is able to just graduate high school and go straight to that, and they already know they want software engineering, that kind of changes things from, because it's a lot cheaper. You literally pay, $6,000, and that's regardless of what state you're from. There's now out-of-state tuition.
Yeah.
I think slowly, maybe, who knows, there might be a loss of grant equity for universities. But why there's such a big stigma that if someone doesn't go to college, they can't be successful. I'm not speaking for South Korea. I'm not sure about the culture there. But in the U.S., there's a stigma that, like, when someone says, oh, you know, I dropped out of college, or I didn't go to college, instantly the majority of people might think, oh, this person is like a failure, they're not doing too well. Where is that type of thinking kind of stem from?
I mean, it just I think it comes from just pretty much people being too you know, caught up in the moment of, you know, college gives you this, you know, this ability to learn anything and everything, and you know more than anybody else who didn't go to college, you know. So it's that kind of mentality sometimes, you know, that we're kind of, you know, we kind of thought, I mean, they teach us that. I mean, they teach us that, you know, through school, K through 12. I mean, that's all it's, you know, pushed as, you know, like a lot of teachers will say, you know, oh, you got to go to college if you want to be successful, you know. So as a kid, you hear that, oh, I have to go to college to be successful. Okay. And then they say, what? If you don't go to college, you'll be just another worker. So you think in your head, okay, does that mean I'm not good enough? If I don't go to college, I'm not good enough. Okay, so then I have to go to college because I want to be good enough, right? But it just...
College was like, it's supposed to be, or at least the way it's talked about, it's supposed to be like students see as, oh, this is the end. But in reality, it's like, it's not the end. This is really a certificate to actually start. And when you start, no one this whole time told you about taxes. That's one thing I never got. Why is it that we're not educated on taxes and students still view college as like the end of like, you know, of just like, you know, you're like your whole life, you've just been doing education and it's through school, but why is that never taught in schools?
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's not, I have no idea why not, to be honest, like it just doesn't make sense to, but that's the system we live in right now, you know, like, and in the US. So hopefully, you know, with this generation coming in, us, you know, coming in, that we can definitely, because I think we have a lot more information available. And I think we are looking to, like, you know, make that next big push, you know. So, and I think it will come, you know, it will definitely come, you know, it's slowly building up. You can see from a lot of the people. But yeah, there's a lot of information that I think they're missing out on in school. And sometimes they, you know, push this idea that is not the best idea, you know, pushing this on to kids, you know, like, for example, college, like what do you want to go to college for and why? You know, for me, it was...
A lot of students can't answer that, to be honest, like, at least for...
Yeah, I mean, like...
The question that when people get to college, they never really think about, like, that whole what next thing.
Yeah. I mean... Yeah, I mean, most people, they just like go to because they were told they have to, you know. For me, like I went not because even like not even because people had told me to, but like I kind of went to because like I thought this will be my, you know, this would be part of my safety net. You know, this will help me, you know, make sure that I don't end up like down, you know, like because like I want to, again, my goal is just to, like, obviously, you know, like help others, my family and other ones. I could have just taken a 9-to-5 job, you know, at a plant or somewhere, you know, like that. So then, you know, that'll be enough for me and my family, and that's okay. You know, I'll be satisfied with that. But that was my mission. I made up my mind in middle school and high school that I want a lot more. I want to build a big, you know, kind of a big tree, you know, like that tree that provides for the other small plants and trees, and then let those plants grow to become big trees too, you know. Because which is just, you know, something that I decided I can't like, you know, wait for someone else to do it, you know, because I shouldn't be that way. I should be working hard and try to make sure I do it too. You know, like we can all try to do it, you know.
So fast forward to the point you say you're working towards the goal of owning 3 academies. Let's say you are there right now and you have this flow of income. What would you want to do next? Would you just want to keep building companies, or do you see yourself in some different fields?
Yeah, I mean, after that, I'm going to diversify. Of course, I'm still going to be expanding slowly on the, you know, academy frontier. But at the same time, I'm going to be, you know, trying to build up maybe a trading company and then also a real estate company. Like those two. Those two are my next part. Yeah. Real estate, because, I mean, that's one of the best, you know, long-term asset values you can have. I mean, that right there, land, apartments, units, you know, like that value right there is what will, you know, set you in that position, you know, to be there permanently, or, you know, it'll make you more safe, you know. So land, real estate is one of the best areas, I think, to be in if you have the capital for it, right? Because you need the capital for it. That's the biggest thing. Because I think that will put you in a place that you can definitely, you know, be more safe in case things go south. Because people still, you know, like they always value land as, you know, one of the most valued things, right? So because it doesn't depreciate that much, you know, it it almost never depreciates, you know, right? Unless something crazy happens, then maybe, you know, the value might go down, you know? So, but it'll definitely keep you there, you know, in a very long-term, market. So it kind of puts you on the safety side, right? So I would like to buy land in different places, build apartments, units, houses.
Outside of your professional career, what are some of the personal goals that you have?
Definitely, I want to get into, I want to be a coach or a referee in soccer. I would love that. Then also, you know, a nonprofit organization. Both of those, I would love to do that. That would be that's one of the reasons I'm building a lot of this. So, you know, because that, remember I was telling you that I want to be a safety net and help others, and I'm gonna use that funding to go into a nonprofit organization, and that would be, you know, that would be like a 20 years, 15 year, 25 year plan, like later, you know, like I'm not exactly even sure how long, but you know, like it'll be down the road, you know, obviously, because you need funding for that. I don't want to just depend on you know, other people, you know, donating. I want to make sure that that nonprofit, like, you know, I can provide a lot too, you know, because that's the big, you know, that's the thing we should be all thinking about. How can we help each other? How can we, you know, push forward together, you know? So, you know, you don't want to have like one person to be on top of everyone and like having the most, and, you know, it's better to, I think, share with other people and you guys can all be happy together, you know? It's better to be happy with, you know, a group than one person being happy.
Most definitely. So when it comes to that goal, would you ever want to, do you see yourself going back to Bosnia to do your work, or where would you want to be doing that work at ideally?
I would like to, you know, work in Iowa and Bosnia, both, you know, because Iowa is my home too, you know, so Iowa is definitely my home. I mean, that's honestly, I think Iowa would be like my first home and then Bosnia second, because, you know, I love Bosnia, of course, you know, but I lived in Iowa most of my life, you know, and that's how it's home for me. So I would like to do as much as I can in Iowa and push Iowa forward, you know, as much as I can, because that's, you know, that's the motherland too, you know. So I would like to do as much as I can in Waterloo, especially Waterloo. I feel like I can do a lot more in Waterloo, because, and then after that, you know, I've expanded to other cities in Iowa, you know, because that's home base. And then, you know, Bosnia too, of course.
So knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your younger self if you could go back in time? Not necessarily what would you do different, but what are some things you wish you knew back?
I'd say stop stressing too much about money. Definitely, I think that's the biggest thing, because I think I was always worried, you know, like after I graduate, what's going to happen? You know, like, am I going to have enough, you know, to provide for myself, you know? And then after that, you know, like, can I actually complete my goal of, you know, opening more and helping others and stuff? You know, I was starting to, like, slowly, I started to doubt myself the fourth year, third year. And I was like, man, this is scary, you know? So you started doubting yourself, you know, stressing, doubting. And then when I finished and started this, you know, I'm just like, why did I do that? You know, it's just like, it was unnecessary, you know?
My last question to you would be, if you could step into my shoes, are there any questions you would have asked yourself today that I didn't?
If I could step into your shoes?
Yeah.
I would say, what are your long-term goals and how often, what are your goals? What were your goals and what are your goals? And how many of the goals did you complete? You know, like, and what is the time frame of it? Like, what is the time frame of all your goals that you completed in the past? You know, like, did you meet your time frame?
Let's dive into it now.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that exact question. Yeah. So you mentioned what was the time frame of your goals, and you said what percent of your goals did you complete, or what did you say?
What is the time frame of your goals, and did you complete all of them, and what, and did you complete them on time? Did you complete all of them, and did you complete them on time? Right? Because some goals we don't complete at all. Yeah. Because like some goals you don't complete at all. Even if you try, you don't complete them. Right. And then some goals you complete a little bit later. Yeah. Because I think it matters. It matters a lot. Because then you can see your schedule. You can kind of see your like schedule of goals. You know, like if you're actually coming through on them. You know, are you just like saying it and not coming through, you know, because can you walk the talk? That's what I'm trying to say, you know, like pretty much, you know, can you put in that work to actually like make notes? Yeah, I was thinking walk it like I talk it. But yeah, anyways, that's all I was thinking about all the time while I was sitting here. I was like, wait a minute. All right. So, yeah. So like, so far I've completed most of my goals in my university to like travel and complete the degrees on time. The degree I was, I think behind by like 6 months, but that's not bad for me. You know, like, I think that's okay. You know, I think that's perfectly fine. The business here in Korea, I think I was behind on opening the study room by like, it wasn't long too, it was just a quarter of the year, so 3 months. So so far I haven't been right on the, you know, month, because I'm trying to be right on the month, you know, because not even year, you know, the month for me, I'm trying to be more precise about it, but it's a little bit hard because you have these unknown things happen, like right now, coronavirus, you know, like I didn't see that coming, you know, at all. Nobody did, I think. So, you know, so those kind of situations, you know, you have to kind of just adjust. So now, like, I've adjusted my, you know, plan for that. Because so I wouldn't say I'm not meeting the future ones right now. Because, you know, the next one I want to do summer or fall, right? The month I was thinking was August or September, you know, around there. But I didn't make a precise month now because it's, you know, it's just right now it's super, like, you know. You know, it's just very flexible right now. I can't guess exactly now because of this whole corona situation. But now, you know, I'm starting to better get a slowly better idea, I guess, you know, but still I'm a little bit lost. I have to wait a little bit longer. I think 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a little bit longer. May will tell me a lot more about, you know, what to do for the expansion. And just, you know, this corona thing just needs to go away.
Well, it's really important that folks don't get too down on themselves when they don't necessarily hit a deadline, because at the end of the day, they do move. And again, like you said, everything is not in your control. Some things you just have to accept and just say, hey, it's fine that I can't necessarily control this.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, is there any points or anything you'd like to let the people know before we wrap up the episode?
Yeah, I would say don't stress about everything. You know, like, I think you'll be fine. Everyone will be okay. Everyone will, you know, kind of move forward. Like you said, you know, like we shouldn't focus too much on stressing about, you know, like a lot of things, you know, because of course you should, like, you know, making sure you're on top of things, making sure you get things done, you know, be serious about it, you know, make sure you get things done when you want to, you know, when you need to. But at the same time, I want to make sure that, you know, people are not just like overstressing about everything, you know. It doesn't help, you know, it doesn't, just making it, all you're thinking about is like, oh, the bad thing, you know, about what happened or what you didn't do right, and you're probably overthinking it, you know, like you're most likely you're overanalyzing. I mean, like, you just have to like actually sit down and like just be more like organized about it, but in a very, you know, calm, stressful, like a less stressful way, you know, like where you're not like, you're not trying to like, you know, kind of destroy yourself, you know, just because of the small thing, you know, happened. You'll be fine, you know, there'll be other opportunities in the future. Like, don't worry too much about it, you know.
If someone wants to reach out to you, would you be okay with that? And if so, what would be the best way for them to reach out to you?
They can definitely reach out to me on my email or Facebook. You can, I mean, you have all my information. You can always pass it along, you know.
And the video.
Yeah, perfect. My email or my Facebook or Instagram too is also okay. And anyway, you know, I'm always here to try to help in any kind of way. You know, I'm trying to, you know, do my best with everyone, even here in Busan, sometimes in Korea too. I try to do what I can. And same in the US, you know, once I get back over there too, I'm going to try to do a lot more things. So I'm here, y'all.
Gang. I really appreciate it, man. It's much appreciated. I know you're on different time zones, so it's a little difficult scheduling this, but thank you for taking the time, right? Hey, man. Much appreciated, fam.
My pleasure, man. I'm always here to help. Whatever you need to do, if you want to do this again later, we can definitely do it again later. I'm always happy to share, you know, with my stories, and also I want to hear from other people too. So let's get this.
We're definitely going to have a series, like every once in a year, hopefully, do this interview and kind of see the progression type deal.
Yeah, that'd be so nice. Yeah. Every year, imagine like 10 years down the road, it's like, damn.
That's fire right there. Oh, that's all for today's episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Much appreciated, and be on the lookout for the next one.